The Nature Journal is brought to you by SAPI in the interest of conserving our planet and enriching and empowering all South Africans.
One of the programs that we do all the time is our ADU slot, and that's also our citizen science slot. But on this occasion, we're going to be chatting to Sally Hoffmeyer. Sally has done a variety of different projects for her degrees, and I thought it was kind of interesting to find out what she's done and why she's done them. And I suppose that is also to encourage other people to say there are different items to have a look at. You don't need to follow one part of a career, but I think eventually somebody does seem to get that little slot and follows that slot. Sally, welcome. And of course, I suppose the first question one asks is, what did you do for your MSc? And of course, why?
I did a coursework master's at the University of Pretoria, and the subject was African mammalogy, African mammals. And my research project was on giraffes and Acacia nigrescens, or knobthorns, in the Kruger National Park. I was looking at whether giraffes might be pollinating the knobthorns.
Okay, so now, were the giraffes pollinating the knobthorns? Because giraffes do fascinate me. They just sort of got their heads in the cloud and they look a little blonde.
In the year that I looked at it, they weren't, because they ate all the flowers within reach. They might do so in other years when the trees flower en masse, but not in my year.
With those giraffes, though, out of interest, did you pick up any occasions where they were doing the bone rolling? Because this is something that has fascinated me.
No, unfortunately, I didn't. I didn't see that.
Pity, because this is fascinating, as you can often say to people. Well, Lucy, the giraffes are carnivorous as they roll the bones and go into their trance. Okay, did MSc, now came that time where you decided PhD. Why on earth does somebody want to keep studying? Because, I mean, after all, there's got to be a break off point where you think to yourself, oh no, not another page.
I suppose I wanted to go into a research career. It did take me a long time to make that decision. I took about 5 years out in between master's and PhD, but eventually I decided that I wanted to go further in research, and then to do that, you really need to get a PhD.
Into your PhD, what did you follow?
I looked at large terrestrial birds. The ADU has a huge data set on large terrestrial birds from the CAR project, and they also have lots of data on these birds in the Bird Atlas project. So I decided to look at these birds to find out what their population trends were and what kinds of environmental change might be affecting them.
When we say large terrestrial birds, what are we talking about?
Basically big birds that spend most of their time on the ground, but they do fly. So the species I looked at were the blue crane, Denham's bustard, and then four species of korhan. And then there are other species included as well, like the black-headed heron and some storks, ground hornbills, and so on.
Now, of course, researchers love acronyms. CAR. Now, do remember that most of us drive them, but we certainly don't think that this has got anything to do with the program with the guys from Top Gear.
No. In this case, CAR stands for Coordinated Avifaunal Road Counts. And what people do is they drive along fixed routes through agricultural areas and they count large terrestrial birds as they go along.
Does this start to show trends at all, or is it a case of, guys, just keep on counting and we'll keep on making notation?
It's a bit of both. I've found some definite trends on some of the species that have been counted for longer periods and over a good part of their range. Some species that haven't been counted for so long, or in areas where the project hasn't been going on for so long, we haven't found trends yet, but we're collecting the data because the more we collect, the more useful it becomes.
The influence that this sort of research has, though, on conservation projects and on further research projects, is there a big influence?
Absolutely. For instance, I found that one species, the southern black korhan, is declining very seriously. We didn't know this before this research. So now, based on my work, we can use that to put the bird on the red list, and then that can be used to justify further research being done into the species and funding being allocated towards this research. So that's just one example of where it leads to further work and further conservation outcomes, hopefully.
Now, the interesting thing here, Sally, though, is that you guys don't go and do all the CAR counts yourselves, do you? This also involves people that are trained to do it, and this also involves citizen science.
Absolutely. There's about 800 members of the public that participate in the CAR counts twice each year. They do one in summer and one in winter. So, yes, there's a huge number of members of the public, citizen scientists, who contribute this very valuable data.
This is kind of interesting to me, because now we turn around and say, here is a bird that is going to be elevated. Well, I suppose elevated in the wrong direction, isn't it? But it's going to be elevated in its threat status. But it's all about people's cooperation and people giving time, and of course, then you guys looking at that data. Do you often, though, when you've done this, go, whoops, hang on, maybe I've made a mistake, need to check things again?
Yes, obviously, we always check our data and our analyses very carefully, and sometimes mistakes happen, and then hopefully we find them and go back and correct them. Sometimes we have to change the methodology of the project as well and ask people to count more species or record different information, like we've just changed the habitat categories that they record when they see birds, because we found that the categories they were using were not as useful as they could have been.
One of the favorites that people sit down and have a look at is to turn around and say, no, sorry chaps, traditionally these things were in this area. Has that tradition changed? And I would imagine it's also moved with accelerated global climate change.
So blue cranes weren't in the Western Cape, and now they are, because they've found that the wheat farming is very favorable for them. They enjoy the wheat fields when they've been harvested, and then they find lots of food in the pastures in winter. So yes, this is something that's changed. The species has moved the core of its range, essentially, from grasslands to the Western Cape. And climate change could have some effect on that. Primarily, we think the main reason they're not doing so well in the grasslands now is habitat loss, habitat change, disturbance from farming, conversion of natural habitat to pine plantations and forestry plantations. Whereas in the Western Cape, habitat has been changed as well, but it's been to their favor in this case.
Yeah, okay, so hang on a minute, guys. We've got some nice farmers here creating lovely fields. Pull in, chaps, and just set up your homes here. And I would imagine the purist is going to turn around and say, but we don't want that. But does it really matter in many ways if the animal is finding a habitat that allows its continuance?
It's a tricky debate, because we've got one species, the blue crane, which is doing very well out of farmland, and then we've got another species, the southern black Kohan, which is in serious trouble because of the farmland, basically. So it's a very interesting debate. Another issue is that the blue crane is only doing well because of the current farming methods and crops that are being used. If those should change, like for instance, if farming moved towards more vineyards in the Overberg in the Western Cape, then the blue crane would definitely be in serious trouble again.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the poor old species are sitting in the middle going, hang on a minute, guys, it's all about me. What are you guys talking about? Involve me in this discussion. When I spoke to you on a previous occasion, you were about to go and research secretary birds. Does wildlife always cooperate with your wants and needs?
Absolutely not. In this case, I went up to the Kalahari and I drove all over Swalu, the private game reserve where I was doing my research, and looked for secretary birds for a couple of months. And I found very few, and I didn't find any breeding at all. So they were not being very cooperative at all.
With something like that, though, do you simply adjust your research criteria?
Yes. In this case, I was able to adjust fairly easily because I had other research that I was going to do as well as the fieldwork. I was always planning to look at the bird atlas data and the CAR data on secretary birds as well, and also data from the rest of the species range throughout sub-Saharan Africa. So I was actually pretty lucky in my case. The whole project wasn't destroyed because I couldn't find breeding secretary birds, and I could focus on the data analysis instead.
Were there any interesting results, though, of your data analysis? Has anything come up and said, this may be why we didn't find them? Are there any thought processes as to why they weren't where you thought they were going to be?
I think that they probably weren't there because it was a particularly dry, hot summer. A number of other species of birds and animal have also been less successful in this last summer, and it just looks like that was probably the reason there. Although over the whole range of the species, it is declining in general, so it may also be part of that larger pattern.
You must kind of get to the point of wondering, is there anything that's not declining? And I suppose that's one of the ones that bothers you as a researcher, because it bothers me as a naturalist. I tend to wonder, is there anything that we can research that's growing?
Absolutely. It's very difficult to find some hope sometimes when we keep finding things that are declining. But I mean, the blue crane is one example of a species that's actually increasing. We think that the overall population is increasing. And there's instances of, for instance, the Marshall eagle, which seems to be possibly increasing in some areas because it's now able to nest on electricity pylons, and it's spreading, possibly increasing in areas where it couldn't be before because there weren't trees for it to nest on. So I'm talking about the Karoo mostly.
Sally, when you get to this point, though, as somebody who now wants to follow a career in research, are there criteria that you look for?
Absolutely. I feel there's no point in getting into a project that doesn't inspire you, because there's huge challenges in this research, in this work. And if you're not inspired by the project, then you're just going to get completely weighed down by the challenges.
When you say this, what do you find, though, inspires you to do your work?
I am inspired by the possibility of finding some ways to protect these birds, but also just understanding ecological systems, understanding what drives these birds, what helps them to succeed, and what is a threat to them. Just understanding the natural world is very interesting and inspiring to me.
I think what we're hearing and what Sally is saying, and it's a tremendously important part as well, no matter what naturalists feel, no matter what conservationists feel, without the fact of science, and both citizen science and, I suppose, science, for want of a better word, but of qualified scientists. Without these folk going out and understanding things, bringing it back and understanding the word adaptive management, I don't believe that things have a really great future. We can't simply go out and decide to change a landscape, move penguins from one area to another area without understanding how the creature thinks or what we understand by its traditional history. Once we understand that, then I do believe that we can bring in conservation initiatives. We also have to be tremendously careful, and we've seen this on a number of occasions, where 20 or 30 years later, scientists are still researching X or Y without any form of conservation or other status coming up behind the fauna or flora. It doesn't really matter, but we do need to understand this. The world is an ever-changing place, and I think that's something that always fascinates me. We have this wonderful occasion where we turn around and say, we're going to work to the books of Levalier and all sorts of other people, and because black rhino occurred in that area, we're not going to allow them into another area. Well, has our climate and our landscape changed to allow creatures to live better in other areas? We're listening to guys talking at the moment about moving winelands from the Western Cape into places like the Free State, just because life is changing. And I suppose maybe it is an accelerated change. Has it always been doing this? Most probably. It's just that we haven't researched it. But I think the most important thing that we also want to try and get in here is that citizen science is tremendously important, and it's important to people like Sally. They need that form of help. They need that form of monitoring, because at the end of the day, we can't afford, as much as I think we'd like to, Sally, we really can't afford 5,000 scientists to be paid to do a job. We do need that other work to come in, and I would imagine a tremendously important part for your life as a scientist.
Absolutely. There's no way that we could get the funding to cover the costs of the amazing research that these citizen scientists do, and we rely on their contribution and we value their contribution incredibly highly.
Sally, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, from me, Tim Newry, that's all we've got time for with this week's program. Well, Sally Hoffmeyer, always great chatting to the folk from the ADU. And I have to thank Professor Les Underhill for buying into the program and assisting us so greatly with a variety of people to talk to who are researchers and scientists.
The Nature Journal is an initiative in support of the sustainability of our planet, its people, and prosperity. Brought to you by SAPI, Global Paper, Packaging, and Cellulose Company. SAPI, inspired by life.